Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weekly Conservative Talk Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
And we are at war!
Yes, we are. Oh, boy, are we at war. Lord!
God of War, Mars, Holst. Good way to start off this. You know what? I don't think we're there yet.
No?
I don't think we're there yet.
Well, Nancy certainly doesn't have her votes yet.
That's right. She doesn't have her votes yet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, you know, massing the troops on the border.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell them the guns will arrive in the boat next week.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez. Oh, Lord. She doesn't have the votes yet, so she's going around twisting arms and clavicles and legs and knees and stuff, and I don't know. I just, you know, it just, if they have to depend on a rules vote to pass this thing, along with the reconciliation bill, and hope that the Senate takes that up, man, this is getting to be a longer and longer shot.
Look, you and I have been paying a great deal of attention to what's been going on.
Yes, we have.
Just about anybody that's going to listen to this show
mm-hmm.
has been paying a great deal of attention to what's been going on.
Yep.
Okay. Most of the people online that you and I are aware of have been paying a lot of attention to what's been going on.
Yep.
But I heard a guy on a local radio show yesterday morning, and he said, you know, what difference does it make as long as it gets passed?
Yeah. Well, I guess we know where he is.
You know, and my problem with this is, you know, I want to get into this. I've got a couple of rants today.
Cool.
I've been going on something, and, you know, We're going to talk about this because it's the biggest deal that's going on right now.
Oh yeah.
And there's a lot to discuss. But in reality, most of what we're doing is beating a dead horse.
Yep.
You and I, you know, are not just preaching to the choir.
Yeah, right.
You know, we're marching in the troop lines here.
Okay? Yep.
Everybody not only agrees with us, you know, they're doing the same thing we are. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But let me kind of go down how I was thinking about this today. Okay, you're right. They don't have the votes. Everyone else knows they don't have the votes. Because, of course, exactly the way everybody's saying it, if they had the votes, they'd be voting.
Yes, they would.
They wouldn't. None of this would be going on at all. Okay, this would be done, deal, finished, over. Okay, so they don't have the votes.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Like the Cylons, they have a plan.
Huh. Well,
and the Constitution is just another barrier. It's just another issue to be dealt with. It's just something to be gotten around.
Hmm.
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant that it's unconstitutional. It's irrelevant that it's ethically challenged. It's irrelevant that it's morally ridiculous. It's irrelevant that they shouldn't be doing it to begin with. it's irrelevant that 70% of the people said, stop now.
Yeah, right.
All of that is irrelevant. 90% of what you and I and everyone else have been yelling and screaming and talking about is irrelevant to them.
Okay.
Now, there are two groups of people. Okay? Us and them.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay.
Okay. Us or them, one of those two groups is delusional. Okay? Let's talk about which one is delusional. Okay? Let's pretend it's not the Dems. Okay?
That's a real willing suspension of disbelief, but go ahead.
Okay. They believe that if they can get something done, everyone will see that they can get something done, and everyone will shut up. Because that's the only problem they have, is that they've been in gridlock. And although it's everybody else's fault, the reality is they know it, and everyone else knows it, it's their fault. They're not getting it done, and so they need to get it done. It has to get done. If they don't get it done, then they can't get anything done because they have all the power and everyone knows they have the power.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If they can't get it done, then they are incompetent and it's, everyone's just maybe throw up their hands and just wait, for 3 years until, get somebody else that's maybe less incompetent. So they have to get it done. It has to get done because
mm-hmm.
then they've solved 90% of the problems. They can prove they can get it done. Second point, who cares? It's historical.
It's
not making a difference about all the rest of it. If they get it done, it's history. History in the making. History done. History of an unbelievable... It's almost more historical than Barack Obama.
Yeah, right. Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
We're delusional.
Okay.
Everyone really wants health care reform done. The only issue, and this is the only issue, it's the only thing that's bothering people, how much it's going to cost.
That would certainly coincide with what happened with Medicare and with Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead.
All right. If they can get people to believe that the cost is not anywhere near what everybody thinks it's going to be, which is at least 10 times worse than the worst estimate.
Yes, right.
Okay. Then get people to believe that it's actually going to save money. Now, understand something. I think there's a whole lot of people out there that absolutely believe it's going to cost the government more money. But that's okay because net, it's going to save the country lots of money because we're going to get rid of all this administrative expense that's wasted on all these big profitable insurance companies that are wasting money because each one of them has a different kind of paperwork. And if we can just reduce the cost to the health industry in its entirety, if we can reduce the cost by $1 trillion, of all the health care money that is spent, every penny of it, by everybody in the entire country, if we can reduce that by $1 trillion by having a single-payer system that costs the government $700 billion, then as far as people are concerned, we just saved $300 billion, and that's a good thing.
And that would be the reality-based community, right?
That would be the reality-based.
Yeah, right.
Okay? Now, okay, you and I and the people that are living and walking and bump into walls and scream, ouch, okay, know that hey, that's just hey. They're delusional. But so what? It's historical, and they have a plan. And if they can just get it done, then everyone will shut up, and then go on to other things, and it'll be wonderful. And who cares about all the stuff that the fringe is worrying about? And that's all we are at the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
The 70% has been stirred up by the fringe. If we mm-hmm. if they pass it, then the fringe doesn't care. Then the fringe is going to shut up, and everyone else will just they don't care because they actually want health care. They just don't want it to cost a lot.
Mm.
I think that's the problem.
Yep.
I think that's why they keep resurrecting it. I think that's why they keep, you know, it keeps going on despite every rational suggestion that says, you know, you're destroying your party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I look at it and go, and this is, you and I have talked on the show and elsewise
yep.
about this idea that liberals see things in such a strange way that it's almost impossible to talk to them rationally because it's just the worldview is just so different.
Hmm.
Often I try to figure out, you know, if it doesn't make any sense to me, okay, but they're doing it anyway, then it has to make sense to them. How does it make
yeah,
sense
that's
to
true.
Them?
Yes.
You know, and this is what I'm thinking is, you know, we are, you know, everything that we're raising is just nothing. I mean, I see it in the conversations online day after day. So, you know, somebody will come up with something that you go, yeah, why would they do that? And I look to somebody on the left and they're going, well, this takes care of that. And then why wouldn't you want it that way? And I'm sitting there going, you actually think that way. You actually
mm-hmm.
think that that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, man. Now, I don't want you and I and everyone else that's listening to this to slip into the liberal mindset. Okay?
Okay.
And we've talked about this. I don't know if we did it in the green room or in the show. Let's talk about it in the show for a second. The liberal mindset is, if you have the information I have, if you have access to the experienced people, the experts like I do, if you're intelligent and rational thinking like I am, then of course you're going to come to the same conclusion I have.
Mm-hmm.
That's a liberal mindset.
Yeah.
Okay. You and I and a whole lot of other people, Paul Ryan is the most obvious congressperson with this, have looked at all this information and go, let me see, a rational person looking at all the information and a judge, you know, having access to all the experts would of course come to the rational conclusion that this healthcare reform is a whole lot of bullshit stupidity.
Yep.
And how anybody else can have any other kind of response is just ridiculous. They have to be idiots, morons, or intellectually challenged. I don't want to repeat myself, but...
Yeah, right.
Okay. So, you know, that's a liberal mindset. They've got to have something that they think that they're hanging on to, you know, that makes rational sense to them, even though
mm-hmm.
it makes no rational sense to us.
Yes.
And Paul Ryan was right in his comments yesterday. We have reached a point where it is simply no longer possible for this to be in any way fixed by a rational discussion because neither side is working on the same rational point of view.
Hmm. Okay.
You know,
yep.
Our rational point of view is so diametrically opposed to their rational point of view that there is no common ground.
Mm-hmm.
It just
mm-hmm.
doesn't exist.
Yep.
And there's 80% of the people in between that, you know, I think really don't care. As long as it doesn't cost a lot, they think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're being told that it doesn't cost a lot.
Right. And that's why I think you and I and everybody that's listening to the show and everybody that we talk to are at fault.
I wouldn't go so far as to say at fault, but we're
yep, at fault.
We are,
because
yeah, okay.
we as a group, conservatives as a group, abdicated our responsibility and allowed ourselves to be either distracted or we didn't do what we were supposed to do. We didn't hold our government accountable to our Constitution.
Yep.
It's not just our fault, you and mine, because
yep.
you know we
yep.
happen to be the 50 and 70 year olds that are in this situation at this time. This
yep.
has been going on for a very, very long time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of people right now, a very large segment of our population, that simply just doesn't understand or know better.
That's true. Absolutely.
And we're not going to we're not going to be able to educate them. And somebody else, what did somebody say? How could we have ended up with so many people that are so opposed to the way the government should be run? And all I could think about was Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson.
Who said?
This argument has been going on since day one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this country has never been in a point where government control or limited government, you know, one side or the other. Well, I shouldn't say that. You know, Hamilton has pretty much won that argument for the last 200 years.
Yes.
Because, and I think this is probably where we are beginning to push back. I think for most of the last 200 years, people do not want to be thought badly of.
Mm-hmm.
And accusations of being mean or greedy or uncaring or racist tended to shut us up.
Yes, it did.
And
very
it's not
so.
Doing that anymore.
No, I would say not.
Okay. There's a fairly significant portion of the people. It's not a majority. It's probably not even substantially a statistical minority. But I would say there's probably 10 or 15, maybe even 20 million people right now where that shit just simply doesn't carry any water anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, you can call me any name in the book, and it absolutely means nothing to me.
Yep.
You know, because the principle stands, you know, whether I am the coldest bitch you've ever met in your life, the principle of limited government stands. The principle of individual sovereignty stands. It doesn't make any difference what kind of person I am.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole lot of us that are that way, and that's fine. And I think that's funny, you know, standing up for our position. Unfortunately, we got 200 years worth of stupidity to overcome, and it's not going to be easy.
No, it isn't.
So,
you know,
that was the
one,
first place beating the dead horse that I had went to.
Yep, I agree. And incidentally, folks, those of you who are thinking that, well, God, they can't do this because that's obviously unconstitutional, deeming something that's passed, I would refer you to Marshall Field and Company versus Clark in the U.S. Supreme Court, which says that the two houses, through their presiding officers, is conclusive evidence that a bill was passed by Congress. And guess who the presiding officers are? If they say it happened, it happened. Whether it happened or not.
I've seen, if you think the Supreme Court can't rule against the Constitution, look at Kelo.
Oh yeah, clearly it can. I mean, Kelo is the most recent one that I know about. I'm sure that there are others. But you can go all the way back to Jim Crow. You can go all the way back to the Dred Scott decision. You can go all the way. I mean, you can go back in history and find that the Supreme Court will, in fact, rule unconstitutionally. It happens. They make mistakes. Some of them are inadvertent. Some of them are with malice aforethought. But they
do. I absolutely believe that, you know, Pelosi, Reid, and Obama, you know, are absolutely convinced that the Supreme Court is not a factor.
Yep, I agree.
Constitutionality is not a factor.
No, not a bit.
As long as the legislative and executive branch agrees, you know, Supreme Court is actually a non-factor.
Yes. Shouldn't be, but it is.
So, they have to show, I think they have to pay lip service to doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is why there's been no vote yet. They can't even
be listed
service votes.
Yes. I mean, they do have to get the votes, either for the slaughter rule or for the underlying bill itself, one or the other. They do have to get those votes. So,
yeah,
folks, you ought to be burning up the lines.
It's got to be one of those situations where if they are seen voting on the slaughter rule, then there are times when I can get my head around the idea that they're nuts and they're irrational. And that it makes sense. There are other times when I'm less focused that kind of turning my head, turning my brain inside my head, 90 degrees, it hurts like hell, it focuses my eyes because now I'm having to look through the ear holes. It just hurts.
Yeah.
And I can't do it for very long. Snap back into place, and then I'm back to normal and looking at the world and going, how could they do that? All right. Now, I suggested that we are to blame.
Yes.
Okay. And now I'm going to, unfortunately, I think I'm going to include you in this particular rant. You and I have talked about this separately, but I don't know where you... I actually don't know where you fell in this particular thing, so I'm going to ask you up front.
Oh, okay.
Did you support or oppose the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2005?
Actually, that's kind of a toughie. There are some aspects of it that I support, and there are other aspects of it that I do not support. Basically, where there is an ability to repay and they escape the ability to repay simply because of the bankruptcy laws, I support them. Where there was not an ability to pay, but people are forced to pay anyway, I oppose them.
Okay. Then I blame you too.
Okay.
This is going to take a little bit of time to explain.
Okay.
And I'm going to try pretty hard not to get too technical with it because I'm going to have to work on bringing this out in the way that I want to.
Okay.
All right. For those that don't know, in 2005, George Bush signed into law the Bankruptcy Reform Act, and that's the short name of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Bankruptcy Reform and Consumer Protection Act of 2005.
Yep.
Or as most of us in the industry like to call it, BARF.
Yeah.
Let me tell you who was against this law. Okay. The people that were against this law were the judges that managed the bankruptcy courts. The people that were against this were the trustees that managed the bankruptcy process. The people that were against this were the professors and instructors that teach bankruptcy law. The people that were against this were the attorneys that represented debtors in bankruptcy law. The people that were against this were the people that represented creditors in bankruptcy law. There was
some of them.
Well, I would hesitate to suggest to you that I can talk to every secured creditor attorney in the five districts that I have direct experience with and find none of them supported this.
And how many unsecured creditors attorneys did you get that from?
The funny thing about it is most unsecured creditors' attorneys are captive attorneys to the creditor, and they supported it wholeheartedly because unsecured creditors were big fans of this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is really, really, really stupid because everyone that actually paid any attention to how this bill was drafted understood that the people that were going to get screwed the worst were the unsecured creditors. And, in fact, that is precisely what's happening. And over the last 18 months, the one group of people that the bankruptcy law was supposed to help most, homeowners,
mm-hmm.
The bankruptcy law has actually, historically, about 40% of people would file bankruptcy and repay some of their debt. 60% of people would file bankruptcy and walk away. That's been pretty much a historical.
Mm-hmm.
The bankruptcy law changed that by about 7 or 8 percentage points. About 7 or 8% more people filed to repay their debts, and 7 or 8% less filed to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Up until about 2 years ago. And the last thing I saw, which was just something that came out last week, over the last 18 months, the numbers have dramatically changed. The numbers are closer to 20% of the people are filing Chapter 13s, and 80% of them are filing Chapter 7s.
Okay.
Because the 13s simply can't handle the situation that currently exists with people underwater on their mortgages.
Okay.
It is not helping at all. And given the situation, because the assets are not there, at this point, more people are doing the 7s and being able to do it. So the unsecured creditors are getting less than they were before. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is, and I suggest that I'm blaming you in part, not to blame you particularly, because
right.
I'm certain that you were not one of the active people that were, you know, promoting it. I was certainly one of the active people fighting it. So you can blame me for having not succeeded, but... it works like this. One of the big selling points of bankruptcy reform was, A, they're going to hold more people accountable for their actions. And a large percentage of conservatives thought that that was a good thing.
Okay.
Okay. That on a selling point, that was a good thing. Okay. The other side of that was that because of that action, it was going to save responsible people money by holding the irresponsible more accountable. The number they kept throwing around was it was going to save everybody $400 a year. Now, where that number came from, nobody was able to really determine where that number came from. It was a wholly made-up number. There was no way in hell that it was going to have any impact whatsoever on, you know, normal credit-bearing people. It had no impact on normal credit-bearing people. If anything, over the last 4 years, interest rates on the average American have gone up, not down, despite what the Fed has been doing. Now, let me take you from that, and you can accept or reject that characterization.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Okay. And let me bring up the health care bill. Okay. One of the issues that's being raised, it's being raised on the periphery because it's one of the benefits that's being touted rather than one of the features. One of the benefits is that with better control of costs, government will be able to better manage health care. Now, they want us to have lots more wellness-type events going on in our health care so that there's less health-related events going on in our health care.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi said it last week in a quote that I don't understand why more people are not paying attention to it, but she said, this is about diet, not diabetes.
Yep, okay. She said that.
This is the whole healthcare reform is about getting people to live healthier, and therefore we'll save money on healthcare costs down the line because people will be living healthier. Now, there is a very large chunk of people that go, yeah, you know, we'd have a whole lot less healthcare costs if you didn't have a whole lot of people suffering from diabetes because they're fat because they eat junk food. So if we could just get people to stop eating fats, trans fats, and salt, and live healthier lives, then the healthcare costs will come down because everyone will be healthier, and that's what we need to do. Okay? This is government control of personal actions for the benefit of the common good.
Yep.
That's what bankruptcy reform was sold on.
Okay.
That your belief that somebody has acted badly gives you the right to create laws that will make them act better. This is no different than the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2005. This is people going, I don't like the way people act, so we're going to use government to make them act better so that we all benefit in the long run. And I'm telling you, my fellow conservatives, to cut that shit out.
Yep.
Because, first of all, you know, for the Bankruptcy Reform Act, I can tell you that there was a whole lot of trustees and judges that took that as a pretty significant insult. That they would allow massive amounts of people to be gaming the system.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked damn hard to make sure that doesn't happen. Now, I'm going to give you an example. One of the things that were said, and boy, we just come down on this, a lot of people came down on this, we came down pretty hard on this. Somebody said that up to 10% of all bankruptcy petitions were fraudulent.
Okay.
Now, that was an FBI statement, which was ridiculous because the question asked was, in how many cases in bankruptcy petitions was fraud prosecuted? And the answer is less than 0.01% of the cases. Not 10% of the cases, not 1% of the cases, not 0.1% of the cases, less than 0.01% of the cases was bankruptcy fraud prosecuted. As a matter of fact, bankruptcy fraud was so rare that the FBI usually issued a press release when they prosecuted somebody for bankruptcy fraud. That's how rare it was. But I want you to understand that maybe that was big fraud. There was a lot more little fraud. I'm going to explain to you a case, one of our cases, that was designated a fraud case. Okay? And there was no prosecution. In the statistical analysis maintained by the U.S. trustee in our district, this case was considered fraud.
Okay.
And I will explain to you how and why it was. Our client appeared at the 341 meeting, which is a meeting that has occurred after a petition is filed, in which creditors are allowed to question the debtor and find out if they are actually really in need of this or not. Now, this hearing is done in front of an administrative trustee.
Okay.
The trustee is actually the attorney that represents the creditors, hired by the court to represent the creditors.
Okay.
Sometimes creditors show up. More often than not, creditors do not. Okay. Our client appeared at the hearing. The trustee began the hearing, started asking the questions of the debtor, and then he stopped and he looked at the debtor and he asked, "What is that in your ear?" And the debtor responded, "What?" And he goes, "What is that that is in your ear?" And our client reached up, grabbed his ear, and said, an earring. The trustee stated, I am looking at your paperwork, and I notice you do not list any jewelry. And the client looked over us, and we looked at over at him and shrugged our shoulders and went, okay. The trustee required that the petition be amended to include the $2 stud earring that was in his ear. Because the trustee found an asset that had not been disclosed, an asset that required the petition to be amended to disclose it, the U.S. trustee noted that it was a fraudulently filed petition, that the trustee found an asset that was not disclosed, and that the paperwork had to be amended to allow that asset to be disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
$2 stud earring.
Okay.
That was one of the 10% of fraudulent bankruptcy filings in 2004. Now, it is hard to understand that level of stupidity. But that, in fact, was the law. The trustee, found an asset that was not listed. The trustee required that asset to be listed. And the U.S. trustee dutifully noted that an asset was found by the trustee not listed on the petition. And the law said that that was a fraudulent petition.
Okay.
And that is the nature of what happens when government gets really involved in the minutia of day-to-day living. Okay. That's why you and I know that the federal government involved in healthcare, okay, is an affront to every single thought of individual liberty we could possibly have. It gives the government a way to get into our daily lives in such a way as to infringe upon every waking minute of it. But that's the kind of power that is being let up loose upon us by this Health Care Reform Act. And it is no different. It is a belief that certain people behave badly and we all suffer for it, and that it is an appropriate use of government to make those people act the way we think they should be acting. Not that they're doing anything illegal, not that they're doing anything wrong, just that they're acting in a way we disagree with. And the more I thought about it today, the more I got pissed. We could have easily been on the wrong side of this if it had been promoted in a slightly different way. We were on the wrong side of this. I wasn't. But conservatives as a general whole, you know, were on the wrong side of this when it came to bankruptcy reform. By the way, they're spending a lot of time talking about possibly reforming the bankruptcy reform law to fix what is obviously a pretty significant problem at this point. We've actually been fighting for this fix for 2 years, and you and I have talked about it, and we disagree about it.
Yep.
The fix that we think would help greatly is to allow federal bankruptcy judges to modify contracts, mortgage contracts, the same way they are allowed to modify every other contract that exists on the planet, with the exception of one. You know, believe it or not, there are certain financial transactions that bankruptcy court can't get involved in.
Okay.
Because there's settlement issues associated with it. Transactions have occurred, settlement hasn't, and bankruptcy can't interfere with that process once the transaction has occurred, but settlement hasn't. It's allowed to do it. But those are pretty significant contracts, and they're very, very, very specific. But generally speaking, a bankruptcy judge can modify every other contract normally associated with business and consumers, with the exception of the primary mortgage on a residence.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that they should be allowed to do that. And if they did that, we would have a whole lot more people filing bankruptcy. And a whole lot more houses being valued where they're supposed to be, rather than some bank saying, that house is worth $500,000 when it's certainly not worth more than $250,000.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, folks, you better understand, there's a whole lot of banks out there that think that they've got a lot of assets out there that don't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We agree on that.
Which brings us back down to the issue of solvency. You know, if you think you have, you know, $500 in your wallet, and there's only $200 in your wallet, you know, it's going to impact the way you act.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially when you go to try to spend
$400. Yeah, right.
Da-da, da-da.
Oh, ain't that bank.
That's part of the problem we have right now is that banks actually know that while on paper it looks like they're perfectly fine, they know they're not. And so they're sitting on $1.9 trillion worth of cash.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, somebody's going to kind of go, you know, you need to make this right. So... It's probably the one place that I want us as a movement to spend some time thinking about. Okay, healthcare is a really big example of, you know, bad government, but there are lots of other examples. And this was the epiphany that I had in 2005. There's lots of really good sounding things that people propose, that government do, that we think, you know, sound pretty good. First, that it's not going to affect, first of all, it's not going to affect us because we don't do that.
Yeah, right.
And two, you know, there is some benefit to everybody by fixing this problem. The problem is, let me see if I can say this correctly. The problem is not how much of a law should be considered. It is whether the law should be considered at all.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
And I know, because that was part of the American Conservative Party's, you know, discussion about founding principles, is we want to be on the point that, you know, before you even begin thinking about how a law should be, the first thing you should be thinking is, should there be a law at all?
Yes.
And more often than not, the answer is no. No, the government shouldn't be making a law about that. And whether there is some good that can come out of it or not is not relevant. We don't get to that point because they shouldn't be making that law in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, okay. Yep.
And we are in that place where we need to make sure that just because something sounds good and it might benefit us in the long run isn't a good enough reason to interfere with people acting in ways we disagree with, but that is perfectly legal for them to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
You know, let's pretend for a second that somebody was gaming the system on bankruptcy. Who gets hurt in that situation?
Creditors.
Do they have recourse?
If it's gamed but it isn't caught by the bankruptcy court, no.
Yeah.
No.
That's not true.
It is true. I've been there.
Well, it's not true.
It is true.
No,
when the bankruptcy court discharges the debtor. And the bankruptcy plan is confirmed, and then the bankruptcy court discharges the debtor, the creditors are forever barred from going back after that debtor again.
That's
on
correct.
On that debt.
Okay.
Yep.
That's perfectly correct.
Yep.
Absolutely right. And totally irrelevant.
Why? No, I mean, not from your statement.
Yeah. Here's why. Because the credit card company charged you and me and that person upwards of 7 or 8% interest in addition to the normal interest rate, because that creditor absolutely knew that there was going to be somebody out there like that.
So?
So, if I assume that somebody is going to cheat, and I charge everybody an amount of money to eliminate the harm of that cheating, then the only way I can lose is by having more people cheat than I had expected.
No. You are trying to say systemically they have more than recovered their costs, but not individually.
And individually, that person's credit score and his ability to get credit is damaged significantly for an extended period of time.
Well, yes, it is. And that's just another one of those...
It's a consequence,
those
of,
consequence of declaring the bankruptcy. But that doesn't mean that creditor was made whole. That particular individual creditor was made whole.
I disagree.
Well...
Because you can only
make your argument systemically. You cannot make it on the individual basis.
And the problem is the law is not based on the individual. The law is based on the systemic impact.
No. The law is, I mean, whether you talk about the old bankruptcy law or the new bankruptcy law, it was always about the individual debtor and the individual creditors.
Okay. Now my question to you is this.
Okay.
Who has the right to deal with that gaming of that system? You or the creditor?
Hmm.
Who has the right to go into the system and say, I'm being cheated by this system? You personally, Bill, or the creditor?
Well, both of us, because Congress is the one who writes the bankruptcy laws.
I'm asking, is it appropriate for you to act on behalf of the creditor to say that the individual debtor has wronged them and you think government should help the creditor?
Oh, no.
That's my
beef is with the creditors who are charging me more because they know they're going to take those losses.
And of course, once the law changed, you of course didn't receive any benefit from that.
Don't know that I did or didn't, but yeah.
I can be pretty much guaranteed that if on January 1st, 2005,
mm-hmm.
you had $8,000 worth of debt and you were paying X dollars worth of interest,
mm-hmm.
and on January 1st, 2006, you had $8,000 worth of debt that you were paying at least, if not more, the same interest rate. I can say that because in the fourth quarter of 2005, when almost 2 million people declared bankruptcy, okay,
mm-hmm.
the next quarter, not a single bank that issued credit cards,
mm-hmm.
of which, you know, obviously a substantial number of them took big hits with 2 million people declaring bankruptcy, not a single one of them reported a loss. Worse, not a single one of them reported a decrease in their profit margins.
Okay. So I'm trying to...
That 2 million people could declare bankruptcy and it didn't have any impact on the banks at all. Now, I know that it had some impact. They probably didn't get 15% growth that quarter. They probably only got 12% growth.
Okay.
Okay? So it had an impact in that their rate of growth slowed temporarily. Okay? But their growth did not stop. And they none of them took losses. Because, boy, we were watching. We had nothing else to do in 2006.
Yeah.
Because 6 months after that law changed, very few people were filing bankruptcy. Nothing else to do. Pay attention to what the impact was.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that, you know, for all the arguments and screaming and yelling about what the impact was, the result was zero to negligible for what the intended fix was.
You have to break it down further than that because all of those things are set up on a divisional basis. So if you can say the credit card divisions didn't experience any negative effect, that's one thing. But to say that the whole of the institution did not experience a negative effect, or if they did, it wasn't measurable. Those are two different statements.
I can rely upon some of the research that was done anecdotally. There's not been a whole lot of academic research into that particular area.
They ought to do that research. I mean, they ought to do that research if for nothing more than to say, did this have an impact? Was it positive or negative? And what does that imply for the bankruptcy laws?
They've been looking at it from the debtor side.
Well, yeah, but that's only half the equation.
I'm sorry?
That's only half the equation. I mean, they need to be looking at both of those sides to say, okay, we did this. We have some period of time that has been in effect. What's the effect of it?
The long-term effect is this year more people will file bankruptcy than before the law was enacted.
Come on, Tracy. That's an economics thing more so than the effect of the bankruptcy law.
We're already doing more than was in 2000, 2001, or 2001, 2002.
Well, yeah.
That was an economic issue, too.
Well, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can't say, okay, these are hard economic times, but we think that that's still going to be representative, so we're going to take that data and we're going to say, oh, yeah, that was the cause of it, was the bankruptcy laws. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, this is where I'll get a little bit more technical than I want to necessarily.
Okay.
as a general rule, people file bankruptcy 2 to 3 years after the financial, the event that causes them the beginning of their financial downfall.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
So the people that are becoming that have been unemployed over the course of 2009 are our bankruptcy clients late next year.
Okay.
Given the severity of the fall of the stock market in 2008-2009,
mm-hmm.
That eliminated a lot of people's ability to fall back on 401s. I think
yep.
we'll see them I think we'll start seeing them more as this year goes along. I think we'll see them after about 18 months rather than 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll start seeing them sooner this time around than in the past.
And if they're smart, it'll be even sooner than that. But anyway.
We're seeing lots and lots of people that are too broke to go broke.
Yep.
It's already too late for them.
And
we're seeing these people are people that own homes are too broke to go broke.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
And in fact,
the home ownership may be causing that.
Well, yeah. In many cases, it is. I mean,
yeah.
There was a time where people filed bankruptcy and they still had a positive net worth.
Sure. Sure.
Bankruptcy happened, and we tell people this all the time. Bankruptcy is not a matter of how much debt you have.
Mm-hmm.
Bankruptcy is actually a factor of how much debt can you service.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't care if you have $10,000 worth of debt or $100,000 worth of debt. If you don't have the income to service that debt, you're bankrupt.
Exactly.
And we see people all the time that are asset rich and income poor.
Sure.
And in a lot of cases, they're only asset rich in the sense that, that it's there on the books right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's going to end soon, given their current situation. The issue that I wanted to raise with this rant was that it is a principal issue. That we need to be. We're fine on the healthcare because everyone understands the problem here.
Sure.
But there are other times where conservatives have been willing to use the government to punish people they thought were acting badly.
Yep. Yep, yep.
And that was an inappropriate use of the government. And we need to be cautious because if everything goes on the way we think it's going to go on over the next year, the next, 8 to 10 months, next year, Congress is going to be owned by the Republicans.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I'm getting really nervous about that.
Well, I am glad that you said Congress is going to be owned by the Republicans. If it was owned by actual conservatives, I'd be a little bit more sanguine about it.
Yeah, except for, and this is where I went into, there's a whole lot of conservatives right now that are perfectly willing, not the Tea Party conservatives. I think Tea Party conservatives do understand the problem. But I think there's still a very significant portion of conservatives that are still very welcome and very desirous of doing bankruptcy reform type stuff.
I don't know that bankruptcy reform doesn't need to be addressed. But the difficulty is, what is the data that supports it? I mean, get away from all of the emotional arguments. Get away from all of the, oh, they're too big to fail. Oh, that poor person over there, they can't keep whatever. Get away from all of that. Go to the data. Say, look, here's where we are. Here's the problems. Here are the benefits. How do we resolve that? Now, that's way too cerebral for any of our legislators to try to contemplate. But that's what needs to happen.
Yep.
Yep.
But these are the places where I'm concerned by even the general conservative point of view.
Yeah.
So I'm beginning to look past the current nightmare.
Yep, yep, absolutely.
Think about what the nightmare is on the other side.
Exactly, and we need to do that. This cannot be, those evil, wicked Democrats, without looking at, those evil, wicked Republicans also. This cannot be about that. This has to be about what is good for this country, what is fair for all concerned. That's right out of the Rotary thing, by the way.
Stop for 1 second.
Yeah, yeah.
Follow us in the green room, people.
Oh, hey. Are we there?
We are in the green room.
Okay. Dang, didn't get shout outs. Okay. We have to be concerned with both sides of that political equation. This cannot just be that, oh, we're looking for political power. This has got to be about what is good for this nation, what is good for its people. And if we can't get to that, then we probably aren't worth saving.
You know, because you said it, I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt.
What?
Okay. But I'm not interested in hearing that from a whole lot of other people. Okay? I'm not interested in government deciding, you know, what's good for Americans.
Well,
I'm not interested in Congress doing that.
I think that depends on if you have to put it in the current vernacular. Legislators that are serving with a servant's heart. I don't know how many better you put that. And that is to say that if a legislator keeping an eye on his own district, yeah, that's right. I mean, yes, they have to do that. But at the same time saying, how does what we are proposing to do affect the entire United States and its people, then I go back to where I was before. We probably aren't worth saving. We probably need to say, okay, we had a constitution, you all ignored it, so we're going to tear you all down and we're going to start over again, and by God, this time we mean it.
My cynicism is deep at this point.
Yes.
My cynicism is deep at this point.
Yeah.
At this point, I think Paul Ryan is damn good congressman.
Yep.
Okay? I think he's doing a really seriously bang-up job doing what he's doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that I don't trust him if he was the one actually writing the laws. Because he's already said things that suggest that government should be involved in fixing the problems.
Well, I guess that supposes how are you going to fix the problem and what do you perceive as the problem?
Well,
if your perception is government is too damn big, a solution to that is you make government smaller. Yeah, there's a solution I'll get back of.
He has said that everyone agrees there's a problem with pre-existing conditions that we need to be able to address. Okay?
Hmm.
Now, you can agree that there's a problem with pre-existing conditions that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But he's in Congress.
Yeah.
Okay? Not his job. It's not Congress's job to fix that.
Yep.
Okay?
I agree.
So while what he's doing is, it's like Scott Brown in Massachusetts. He being the 41st vote is a really great thing, but putting him in charge Congress is not something that I'm anxious to do.
I mean, he's a Northeastern Republican, that's for sure. Isn't any doubt about it.
Okay.
And we're going to get real upset with him over other stuff.
Right, so there's a lot of people at this particular point in time where we're sitting there going, they're fighting against this Obamacare. But if you listen to what they say on the bottom side, it's not that they oppose government involvement in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
It's that they just oppose this level of government involvement in healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I know.
I've been saying this for weeks now. You know, people are complaining about George Bush having robbed the 7-Eleven. Meanwhile, Barack Obama's robbing the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? I understand your complaint about him robbing the 7-Eleven, but Obama's robbing the bank, and I think we've got a bigger problem there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we'll assign one patrolman to this one, but we got a whole bunch of them we've got to assign to the other one. Yeah, I know.
But I know. Yeah, that's the other side of that. You know, there's a whole lot of people right now going, you know, Barack Obama robbing the bank is a really bad idea. Let's all get together and just rob the 7-Eleven.
Instead.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be involved in health care. Government.
I agree.
Even the people that we're supporting at this particular point are not saying that. They're saying, this goes too far. This is too intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
Let's scale this back. They're not saying, let's get rid of this. They're saying, let's scale it back.
Get rid of it. Yeah.
Right.
I agree with you. I will only point out this. We did not get into this position overnight. We are not going to get out of it overnight. So, I will take my allies where I can find them, while we also look at a bigger picture.
Well, I'm kind of, you know, I hate to say this.
Mm-hmm.
I really hate to say this. No, I don't hate to say this. I'm smiling when I'm saying this. I'm kind of really hoping that, you know, things get extremely bad.
They're about as they get right now.
Nah.
Oh, yeah.
Nah. You know why it's not that bad right now?
Well, because health care hasn't passed yet, but yeah, go.
No, because there's not 9 million people on the street like there should be right now. Look, if mortgage companies and unemployment were both done in the way that they have been over the last 10 years, 20 years, then there would be 9 million people currently out of their homes that are, in fact, still in them.
Okay.
You know, because there are people that have been on unemployment now for a year.
Yep.
Or more.
Mm-hmm.
Those are people that would have, in the past, have already gone through their unemployment, already gone through their 401ks, already sold virtually everything they could at every garage sale they could, you know, and pawned their kids' piggy bank.
Yep.
You know, months ago.
Yep.
Months ago. And mortgage companies were going to keep you out. You're done.
Yeah.
The problem that, you know, right now, I think the number I saw was there are currently 6 million housing units vacant.
Wow.
6 million housing units vacant.
Wow. That's a bunch.
But there are 9 million more mortgages in some level of default.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, the only reason that a lot of people are, you know, the banks have stopped throwing people out on the street is because there's 6 million vacant homes now.
Yeah, right.
You know, 3 or 4 million more vacant homes now, you know, kills the housing market.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, it's, you know, it's on life support, you know, and there's barely, you know, brain, waves being registered.
Yeah.
But, you know, 3 million more vacant homes on, you know, kills the market, just kills it. And I think they know it. They can't afford to put that many on there. I mean, we're seeing more and more banks, you know, are going through the foreclosure, and then the sale occurs and the confirmation hearing occurs, and there's no writ of assistance.
And that means what?
The bank doesn't ask to have the people evicted.
Ah, got it.
In some cases, we're seeing more and more banks, after the whole process is done and over, sending a letter to them saying, if you pay $1,000 a month rent, we'll let you stay there.
Uh-huh, okay.
Because, you know, the people are less likely to trash the place. And of course, the fact that it's not empty means that it's much less likely to be trashed too.
Yeah, that's true.
Then there's at least something coming in the books on it.
Hmm.
You know, not further eroding the rest of the properties they have in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think we're going to see more of that as this year goes along. And if the, you know, if things continue to proceed the way that you and I both agree they're proceeding, then it's going to get much, much worse. No, I think it, you know, it could be a lot worse right now. We could literally have, you know, millions of people, you know, wandering the streets at this point. You know, we don't, and I understand why we don't. And you know, I'm certainly not interested in having, you know, significant numbers of homeless people that are, in fact, you know, middle-class Americans that have never been that way before, wandering the streets, because it would be a mess.
Oh, yeah.
But the side part of that is we wouldn't be having this discussion about health care. You know, because there would be 100,000 people living in tents on, you know, in front of the White House. You know.
Okay. I'm not seeing how you get there, but.
Well, because I think there'll be a lot of people screaming that the government's got to do something.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
As a matter of fact, if John McCain was in office right now and everything else was the same, I think you'd see 20,000 tents in front of the White House.
Yeah, probably. Yep.
You know.
Yep. I agree.
So, jeez. You know, the fact that we don't see that at this point, it may be a function of, you know, the politics, but also the fact that, you know, there's some enlightened self-interest going on in the government and banks that are going, you know, throwing another couple million people out on the streets, really bad for business.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, it can easily get much worse. I think it can get a lot worse. I think it can get a lot worse. And I think we're getting to the point where, you know, if the market turns at this point, you know, if we give up 50% of the market's bounce over the last year, well, we don't even have to go back off the lows. Just go 50% of the way back to those lows, you know, and we see, you know, unemployment begin inching up as the spring progresses, you know, I think the spiral goes much faster.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So no, I don't think we're bad yet at all. I'm not saying that we're great or even good. Piss poor is a probably good way of putting it, you know. But bad, I don't know what's I don't know what's hanging things together. You know.
Yeah. Well, I don't either. I mean, you know, and now they're talking about. 3.6% GDP growth in the next couple of quarters, you know, and I'm sitting here saying, how do you guys get there? I mean, if you just tell me how you get there, okay, but I mean, it isn't there. I'm not seeing it. I mean, what I'm seeing is declining state revenues, declining federal revenues, declining sales tax revenues.
Double digit.
Oh, yeah.
Double
so
digit.
Tell me how you get to a positive GDP number with all of those declines, unless it's based purely on inventory. But I'm not even sure there's enough dollars left in that system to support that inventory.
Well, the employment report that came out last week, they sat there and talked about the 51,000 jobs that were, the 36,000 jobs that were lost.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I said, look at the numbers a little closer. That included 15,000 people hired part-time by the Census Bureau.
Yep.
So it was more like 51,000 because those jobs are going to last for 2 months and that's it.
Exactly.
They're part-time. They're not permanent. They are going to end in the next 60 to 90 days.
Yep.
How can you include them into, you know, employment numbers?
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, we know they're cooking the books in different ways, but...
Exactly. You know, and maybe what they're hoping for is that they'll start seeing construction people coming back on the jobs after, you know, once spring actually gets here. But without a housing rebound, I don't see how you get that.
And we're not seeing the starts go up.
No, nope, we aren't.
Starts are still staying where they were.
Yep. Well, and in a lot of rural areas, those starts are dramatically down from a year ago, which was dramatically down from the year before that. I mean, we aren't seeing building permits here in my county. I mean, yeah, we're seeing some, but they're small. They're small things. Probably
yeah,
some folks who want to obey the law, but I don't know. Who knows?
You know, I know the second shoe has already dropped. The question is, boy, it's coming from a pretty big height. Because
it must be. Gotta be.
You know, I don't understand what's holding things together. Based on what I'm seeing, you know, on, you know, clients all over the country at this point,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Although
I did read a report 3 or 4 days or so ago now, maybe a little bit longer than that, where at least the San Diego area, housing prices were starting to go back up.
They
were recovering.
They've been rebounding since September, but they have not. That looks to have been put on hold this last month.
So they're just kind of stagnant at this point.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. I'm going to end this a little early tonight.
Okay. You betcha.
Only because that there's somebody that has requires my attention.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you need to go spend that attention there then.
All right.
All righty, kiddo.
Talk to you next week.
You betcha. Night, Tracy.
Bye.